The date is April 7th, 2000, and we're watching Ready to Rumble. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Sean Dawkins to my Gordy Boggs.
Hello, I'm... what's a Colin Money Stewart?
Oh, do we all need
Sugar Daddy Stewart? Yeah. That's what it is.
Do we all need like wrestling quotation marks in between our first and last names tonight because of this?
Yeah, I feel like we probably do. Yeah. So,
well, because there is actually a third one of us tonight, we brought in a guest, and we've carefully timed this all out so that Colin and my appearances on his show coincide with us releasing this episode. So if you are a Smallville fan, you should be listening to his show Farm to Fable. If you're a fan of role-playing games, you should be listening and looking at his RPG Academy stuff. Please welcome back our guest from our Clue episode, Mr. Michael Ross.
That's Michael Cage Match Ross to you.
There
Michael Cage Match, right on.
I was wondering if you're going to go like Superman related, like Steel or...
You know, that probably would have, if I had more time, I might have come up with that one. But short notice, I'm like scrambling for, what's a wrestling term? Scorpion Deathlock Michael.
Yeah. I don't know. Mine would be like, you know, Sean Cream Puff Wells or something like that. I'm just a softy in the middle.
Mine would actually be Michael, the old man with back problems that should not be in a wrestling ring at all.
Yeah.
Come on now.
The I'm too old for this shit, Wells. Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. So I do, if you will grant me just a little bit of leeway here, I want to take a very quick minute and say that I was very pleased to be invited to your show last time. I had you and Colin on my show. You both did fantastic. I really enjoyed what you brought to the show. And it's very common, like when a podcaster is a guest on another podcast, they usually, you know, kind of throw out an invite, whether they mean it or not. So I took you up on yours, whether you meant me to actually be on your show or not. And we looked at Clue, and Colin didn't really like it. And I tried to be kind of funny because I don't like it didn't really hurt my feelings or anything, but I tried to be kind of funny. I was picking back on Colin and I kind of feel like I messed up the normal sort of like tone of the show. And I felt bad because I actually listened to the episode. And so I want everybody to realize I was not actually upset at Colin. I'm sorry if I kind of threw off the normal tone and pattern of the show. So I'm going to try to be a better guest this time and maybe follow along with the rules and not throw too much of my own personality into it.
The only rules are there are no rules. I mean, we loved having you on this show, and I think the tone of our show changes depending on whether I hated a movie or whether Colin hated a movie, or, you know, if we all hated a movie. It doesn't matter, right? So we appreciate you having us on your show. And so, I mean, we are very happy to reciprocate because we always have fun when we talk to you. Now, you came up with Cage Match Ross pretty fast there. I mean, maybe you were racking your brain for a while beforehand, but you came in with the aggression of a wrestler. What is your wrestling love? Are you a fan of the WWF, or in this case, the WCW?
Okay, so I do have a little bit of a history as a very young person. So I'm old now, but when I was a young person, like, you know, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that range, I was very big into professional wrestling. This was WWF, I think. Like the original, yeah. There was like also like a Saturday morning cartoon, like a Hulk Hogan cartoon. Like I was all into that. It was right around the time Sting was a big thing. I think even before he took on the Crow persona, sort of, I think he's in this movie with. Absolutely loved it. Thought it was real. You couldn't tell me otherwise. I went to like a local, you know, at the high school match. And I'm like flipping people off. It was awful. And then funnily enough, the Princess Bride is what ruined wrestling for me.
Andre the
because
Giant?
I watched the Princess Bride. I saw Andre the Giant. And at the time, Andre wasn't wrestling. because they came up with some reason why he wasn't there. But I'm like, he wasn't there because he was doing the movie. So they're lying to me. And that destroyed my brain. And I stopped watching wrestling after that.
Wow.
Oh, I hope that wasn't the same year you found out there was no Santa Claus.
What?
Sorry. Sorry, Michael. Oh, I have a few more things I need to tell you, maybe later. So this week, we're looking back at April 2000, when the movies and theaters were 28 days, not to be confused with 28 days later. We're talking Sandy B and Rehab. That's what we're talking about here.
That's the scary one, right?
Yeah, that's right. 28 days later is the scary one.
I disagree.
Oh, okay. Whatever it takes, The Skulls, Road to El Dorado, and of course our movie for today, Ready to Rumble, which earned $12.5 million on a $24 million budget.
And of course, coming out in the year 2000, the math is easy on this one. This movie is 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to double check. I got scared by my overconfidence.
Yeah.
But just in case you haven't seen this movie, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you haven't seen it, please hit pause now, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Well, yeah, and because it was an April release, I mean, we're talking almost exactly 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
So for this movie, I have two taglines that I found that appear on the poster. The first is, they're headed for the big time, face first.
That only really makes sense when you watch the movie, because there is a lot of like faces getting smashed into stuff shots.
Yeah.
They seem to really like that one.
Yeah. lot of groin activity too.
Yeah, lots of groin hits too.
Well, the second is, sometimes two heads are simply more than one.
That one's just mean.
Yeah. I love that one, though. Oh, my God. They are simply more than one. But really, neither of those describes this movie, so we need to go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
When pro wrestling superfans Sean and Gordy leave their small town of Lusk, Wyoming and travel to the big city to watch their idol and WCW World Heavyweight Champion Jimmy King compete on WCW Monday Night Nitro, they are horrified when they witness a coup led by WCW boss Tyson Sinclair, which leaves their hero decimated, banned from the WCW for life, and his championship in the hands of Diamond Dallas Page. Feeling partially responsible for inciting the incident with bad karma and having not much else going for them, after crashing their sewage truck on the way back from the show, Sean and Gordy decide to find Jimmy King and help him reclaim his throne. Unfortunately, when they find the King, they discover he's not so majestic, having taken to hiding out in his parents' RV dressed in ladies' clothing, hiding from who knows who. However, with time, the boys manage to break through to the King and concoct a plan to get back to Nitro so King can get his revenge on Sinclair and Diamond Dallas. The plan goes swimmingly and results in King getting his rematch in a cage match at the next pay-per-view, which Sinclair promises that to win, Jimmy will only have to survive. With a rematch in the cards, King and the boys set out to get back into ring shape and find some allies to join the fight against Sinclair and ensure the King's safety in the cage. When the pay-per-view arrives, we discover that the cage match is not just a single cage, but a triple cage match in which Jimmy and Dallas will have to fight to the top to retrieve the belt. Sinclair, of course, gets his cronies and Jimmy's own estranged son to interfere, but with some timely intervention from WCW icons Goldberg, Booker T, Sting, and Disco Inferno? As well as Gordy, who ascends to wrestling stardom as The Law, the King climbs to the top of the cage and is once more crowned WCW World Heavyweight Champion. That is your 60-second synopsis.
Nice. So as Michael touched on, and you'd have to have listened to our Clue episode to know this, so if you haven't listened to our Clue episode and... not so very many people did listen to our Clue episode. It was obviously not a popular choice. The story that we have is that because Colin didn't really like Clue, he told Michael that, well, you can come on our podcast and dump on a movie that I loved as a child. So Colin put in the thought and he came up with Ready to Rumble. So Michael... you have not seen this movie, correct, until now?
Yes, I had never watched it before. I have now watched it, obviously, for this, so I have seen it within the last, like, 3 or 4 days.
So this is your revenge podcast. All right, well.
You know, I don't like to think of it that way, because I went into it hoping that I would like this movie. Maybe yeah. I'd even love this movie, because that would just be a great story for the continuation, like the, you know, the second chapter twist, is that, oh, Michael loves this movie.
Yeah.
I did not like this movie.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
Spoiler alert. And then, you know, to make me angry, I rented the movie, because I do not own it. So I rented the movie. I fell asleep within the first 20 minutes of this movie, so I had to pay to rent this damn thing twice.
Wow.
Well, maybe we'll have to join your Patreon. We'll join your Patreon, and it'll be the I used to like this one apology.
I mean, just 1 month, $3, we're good. Like, it yeah. wasn't that expensive to rent, but they did get me twice. So I like that somebody somewhere is probably going to get a spreadsheet going, holy shit, Ready to Rumble. We got like 5 rentals over the last couple of days, maybe. And like, it'll start hitting like people's social media feeds. It'll like this surge in popularity was just because we had to all watch it. Though, Colin, do you own this movie? Did you rent it, or do you actually like have this on DVD?
No, you better believe I own it. I've owned a copy of this movie since I was like 14 years old.
You know, I just laugh about the fact that David Arquette could be sitting there one day and get this residual check for 4 cents because he had a really good contract negotiation back in 2000. You know, it's like someone rented it twice. Holy shit.
They must love it.
Yeah, see, much like Michael, I also had never seen this movie before. Now, I am familiar with this movie just because of my days at the video store. This was around the time that I was working in the video store. So I remember seeing this one on the new release wall for years. You know, for some reason, that one seemed to last longer on the new release wall than 1 year. Like, there was only one copy, but I vividly remember the poster of David Arquette in the headlock. It's funny, no one can see this, but Michael has a background, which is that image right now. I'm very accustomed to seeing that. But Colin, this was your choice. This was the one you wanted Michael to hopefully fall in love with. What is your experience with Ready to Rumble?
I mean, to me, it's like, it's not even, my experience with Ready to Rumble is really more about my experience with professional wrestling. And it's kind of funny because I've recently gotten back, like, pretty hardcore back into professional wrestling. I took a hiatus probably from the like 2010s to 2020. But when I was in junior high, it would have been around like WrestleMania 14, that was when Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin fought. And that was kind of when I really got into professional wrestling. And from that point on, I was like my wife asked me the other day, like what I watched on TV when I was younger. And honestly, from the age of probably like 13 to 18, all I watched every day was professional wrestling.
Okay.
And like I watched anytime it was on, no matter like what league it was. Like I remember I'd watch like WWF Monday Night Raw on Mondays, and then they'd have WCW Nitro replay on Tuesdays, so then I'd watch that, and then WCW Thunder on Wednesdays, SmackDown on Thursdays, and then ECW on Fridays, and then whatever random thing was on Saturdays. Like I bought all the magazines.
No discrimination.
No brand loyalty.
What about things like Stampede Wrestling?
Yeah, I'd find old Stampede Wrestlings and watch that. Any documentary that was on, anything okay. that like vaguely, you know.
So who was your guy? Did you have like your ultimate, not warrior, but like favorite wrestler? You would go to the mat for them. Who was it that you just loved?
Yeah, my favorite wrestler is, he just recently retired, but it's always been Triple H. He was always my guy.
So what does the triple H stand for? Like, what are the HHH in? Is there?
It stands for Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
When he
originally debuted, his character was like a Greenwich blue blood snob, and then later on he's one of the guys who formed like Degeneration X, who was pretty big, and then you know WCW had like the NWO, which was kind of the counterpart and all that. But yeah, it was just, and even like video games, like. like, if I wasn't watching wrestling, then I was playing wrestling video games. Like, I cannot overstate how much professional wrestling dominated my life.
I mean, and if you were to throw down pro wrestling on the original Nintendo, I will Starman your ass into oblivion. But beyond that, I have no experience with the games.
Yeah. And then I remember when this movie came out, because I was just like, whoa, like, there's all my guys. So they figured, like, I remember the trailer, like, featured, you know, like, Goldberg and Sting, even though Sting's really only in it for, like, 2 seconds. But I love Sting when he was in had the Crow gimmick going on, which he still does. But yeah, anyways, I love this movie. It was one of those movies that I would watch on repeat. Like, I could literally watch it immediately after finishing it. But to be honest, like, I haven't watched it in quite a long time. It's just been sitting collecting dust on my shelf. So yeah, that's my story of Ready to Rumble. I just remember like being able to quote this movie verbatim from my mind and just watching it with my cousin and laughing my ass off.
Wow, this is your clue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Like, on this go around, there was a whole bunch of spoiler alert for what I thought. I still love this movie more than anything. I would say I almost love it more. There were things that I hadn't even picked up on when I was younger that I thought were a lot funnier now. So,
well, I'll try to stay neutral so that we wait until the end to see how this podcast falls. Let's jump into Ready to Rumble, directed by Brian Robbins, who is the director of such treasures as Norbit and Meet Dave, but also a movie I really love called The Perfect Score, which is a heist movie. It's got, like, Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans, and they want to steal the answers to the SATs. It was awesome, awesome heist movie. Produced by Robert F. Neumeier, Jeffrey Silver, and written by Steve Brill, who we've seen on the show before as the writer of Mighty Ducks, and he's the developer of the Game Changers series on Disney+. And so we open this movie on the reason why I knew this was one of Colin's favorite movies of all times, a montage of wrestlers through the ages. Right there, opening it up, Colin as a child has a boner right now.
Yeah, honestly, Michael, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you weren't hooked in these first 5 minutes, man. Like, the scene, you have like Sean's just epic, like, monologue. I've probably given that same monologue to people about, like, professional wrestling and my guys in the past. But that scene when Gordy is daydreaming with the clerk, it's so epic. I wanted to do that almost for I used to like this one piece theater, but it was pretty short, so I just kind of left it. But man, if you weren't hooked by that, then there was no hope for you in this movie.
Yeah, again, I fell asleep. Now, granted, I told Sean before we started recording, I've been doing a lot of yard work, and I was just really tired. So it wasn't like it was so boring. Like, I was just really tired. I probably shouldn't have rented it that night to begin with, but I was trying to, you know, squeeze it in. So I fell asleep. I think I got a little bit past that opening segment, and that was pretty much when I went out. But the thing that struck me is this feels like a Kevin Smith movie.
Yes! I totally thought, like,
a bad one. Not a good one. Your opinion might vary on which ones those are, but I love the original Clerks movie. I just think it is amazing. And you go, this set it, like, the opening of the convenience store, you got the two kind of quote-unquote losers hanging out outside. Like, I definitely got some Clerks vibes off of it, but then when it came to the dialogue, I'm like, Kevin Smith, love him or hate him, the dude can write good dialogue. And I think that's what he's probably best at, even more so than anything else. And I was just like, the dialogue in here is bad.
Well, like, I was going to say, it reminds, like, even the whole thing with the finger up the butt, it reminded me of, and people would say this is not one of Kevin Smith's best, but Mallrats. I still love it, is Mallrats.
Yeah. What do they call it? There's a name for the hand up the butt.
Stink palm.
Stink palm.
Yeah, stink palm. Yeah. Yeah,
definitely, like, got some stink palm vibes from that as well.
Yeah, like, because I think when I had originally watched Ready to Rumble, I hadn't seen Clerks or Mallrats or any Kevin Smith movies other than Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back. No, that came in 2001, so I wouldn't have seen any of those movies really yet. But watching it this time around, I picked up on that same thing. I was like, ooh, I still like it, but I think I like it because I like Kevin Smith movies, and this movie is kind of a ripoff It's like a Kevin Smith movie with professional wrestling injected. And I'll grant you that the dialogue
isn't as smart.
Yeah. It's all this like sort of exposition, like you got to tell us what's going on. And then, okay, I get it. Like, I get what movies are trying to do. I watch a lot of movies. I understand. But I hated the whole dad is a cop character. That made me think of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Like, I kind of get that too, because it's sort of like a road trip movie, except instead of famous people through history, it's wrestlers.
So you're saying it's the worst. It's the worst part of every like 80s, 90s buddy movie.
Kind of, yes. Like, in my opinion, like, it's like it is definitely like homaging or ripping off what I would consider better movies. But I can kind of see what they're
Tackleberry's family. It's like totally. Tackleberry's family, where they're all cops and they all wrestle and everything like that. I mean, it gives me those vibes. Like, the payoff of the dad being the cop is when his whole family is sitting around the table dressed in their cop uniforms and pulling a gun.
Well, and then his character, well, again, I don't want to jump to the end, but yeah, like it sort of pays off, and you know, you get the turn later in the movie, but like, like the whole thing where he's like, he's frisking the friend. I can't remember maybe the actor. And he's like, what's this, when he cups his nuts? And he's like, that's my balls. That, again, that, like, it's a laugh. It's a poorly written, executed joke. That's all it's there for. It's like, I got the heebie-jeebies from his whole character. It just felt like, so in a movie about wrestling, it seemed over the top.
Well, plus the other thing that kind of struck me is, I don't know how many movies from the 2000s that the song My Own Worst Enemy plays in, but it has to be some sort of Guinness World Record. Like, I feel like every 2000s teen movie plays that song.
One of the American Pies, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's just, there's something, I wish I could pin down what it is I'm seeing, but there was like an aesthetic to these 2000, like the year 2000, like the basically like 1999 to 2001, there is some sort of aesthetic present in all these teen raunchy movies. I don't know what it is, but it like immediately brings me back to 14 years old. Just the way, just everything about it, the music, the way it's filmed. Like, I watched Dude, Where's My Car the other night, and I was like, it's the same. Like,
so did I.
Freddy Got Fingered, it's the same. American Pie, Euro Trip, like, it's all that in this. Like, and there's just something, it's just something, like, I don't know, it might even be the lighting. I can't put my finger on it, but every time I watch these movies, I'm like, okay, I'm in the year 2000.
Yeah, something about the framing of the cinematography as well, maybe. I mean, I've noticed that, you know, like, everyone's kind of shot from a little bit lower, and the way the store is framed, I don't know. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, there seems to be an early 2000s look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then we get into the fantasy in the convenience store, where everything is bright green and overdone. But with the fantasy, I'm kind of disappointed that there was only the one fantasy. I mean, we already referenced something like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where at least there's a couple moments of fantasy whenever they're out of it. Like, there's the bad medicine when Jay has the boner, and there's the there's the girls getting out of the van. You know, so there's different things like that. But this fantasy, it's kind of like, I wish the fantasies had been more spread out in the movie, because it was kind of fun if this character was more into the dreaming.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a setup for that character, that character has a dream to be a wrestler, because that's what they're fantasizing about.
Yeah.
But there's not enough to the build up of it. Like you said, there had been like two or three other, or at least one more, at some point, then I think the end of the movie, it would feel like it paid off something. But here it just seems disconnected. It seemed like it was just an excuse to have Macho Man in a scene and to bring in, like, the, you know, the characters. I did read up a little bit on the movie, and apparently the entire thing was propaganda from the WCW. They were losing viewership, and this whole thing was like, how can we get people interested? Yeah. Let's do a movie with all of our wrestlers in it, and let's try to make people excited. It failed miserably, and the WCW collapsed like 2 years later.
Yeah, like, to put it into context, in 2001, Vince McMahon, the owner of WWF at the time, buys WCW, and it's and it's over. And I mean, too, like, having been watching WCW and this movie, like, I'll put it this way. The spiritual successor to this movie is a documentary called You Can't Kill David Arquette, mm-hmm. which is on Netflix, and you can watch it. And it's all about how David Arquette, essentially, he becomes a professional wrestler in real life. And a lot of his story is spurned off of, like, after this movie came out as cross-promotion, they put him in an actual triple cage match at a pay-per-view and made him the WCW world champion, which, like, as if the fans weren't already running away from WCW fast enough, immediately, like, incited the anger of all professional wrestling right. fandom. And, you know, I remember hating David Arquette at that time. And
it's like Andy yeah. Kaufman.
I have nothing against David Arquette as an actor. Like, I don't think he's the best in the world, but I've enjoyed him in certain movies. I think he's adequate, you know, in this movie as far as his performance. But if you're going to build a propaganda sort of movie and the whole point is to try to, you know, rebuild excitement, isn't there somebody else that could have been better, that especially for the cross promotion about actually putting him in the ring, that would have, you know, made it a little bit more believable that he could actually do these things? I just feel like it's a yeah. weird choice for that whole process.
The only person that I know that's a bigger wrestling fan than David Arquette is Freddie Prinze Jr. Yeah, I mean, Freddie Prinze Jr. worked for them. Yeah.
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 I agree with you, Michael. Watching this movie this time around, I actually think one of the biggest failings is having a fictional wrestler be one of the protagonists. Like, if you were going to do CrossFit, like, I felt like there wasn't enough of their actual stars to make it compelling. Like, Diamond Dallas Page, even at the time, he was not, like, one of the biggest guys. And they have guys who are, like, nothings, like Kurt Hennig, like Mr. Perfect. He was big at one point, but by the time this movie rolls around, he's nothing. Sid Vicious kind of had fallen off. They have Perry Saturn.
John Cena's, like, first appearance,
yep.
though, huh?
I saw that in the trivia section. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, when he was still going around as the prototype in OVW. But anyways, like you could have used more Goldberg, more Sting, other guys that were big at the time would have been like your Kevin Nash's and your, or even the Bret. Oh, I think Bret Hart was done by this time, but you know, there was a lot of other guys that they could have highlighted more and used more to further the story, I thought.
Yeah, because, you know, on top of that, you have Oliver Platt, who I think is a national treasure. I love the dude. I think he, mm-hmm. there's been some amazing movies they've been in. I just recently did a rewatch.
Lake Placid.
Yeah, Lake Placid, definitely. And then I think Three Musketeers, like that 90 version. Yeah. Oh, he is amazing in that movie. But why not pick an actual wrestler and make them the star of the movie? Like, why create a fictional character? If it's all propaganda, it just seems like you could have done a better job if you take an actual wrestler and do this with them, and then you could cross promote them losing the match to the actual loss of the belt. Like, you know, you could cross promote when the, you know, I don't know, it seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, the main leads of this movie, I don't buy any of them in this role. Scott Kahn, I mean, maybe, like, he's kind of a beefy dude,
mm-hmm.
but like Oliver Platt doesn't look like he's physical enough to do wrestling. And I know you can make an argument like Mankind doesn't look like he should be a wrestler, but there is still something about Mankind versus someone like Oliver Platt that I find Oliver Platt to not be believable. It's the same with Rose McGowan as Sasha.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, you know, she's a gorgeous woman, but she is not a WCW Nitro girl, right? Like, she's...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did not like any of that. Like, I also knew, I was like, please don't let this be the thing where the insanely beautiful girl for some reason likes the doofus because they're doofusy. So again, spoilers, when we find out that she was just doing this to, you know, help Joey the Pants, whatever his character was, his scheme, I was like, well, at least that's good, because I would have been more upset if she actually loved or, you know, liked even Gordy's character, because he's not very likable.
That's funny, because I have him as Joey Pants in my notes, too.
Yeah, Joey Pants. I love that dude. Now, that guy is an amazing actor. But, yeah.
Okay, so we find out that these guys pump porta potties for a living because, of course, with a movie like this, that's what you're going to have for a job. But the fact that he pranks Sean with the suction thing, that seems like a very mean prank. Like, that goes a little bit too far for me.
Yeah, I feel like they made them like waste disposal people just for that gag, because it doesn't do any, like, there's really no other payoff other than when they wreck the truck later on. But even that, they don't really do a lot with it. I just feel like they're like, it'll be funny in gross humor. It's almost like a Jackass stunt sort of a thing.
Well, they use it as their Trojan horse at one point in the movie where they get the
cane. I guess that's true, yeah.
The Trojan porta potty.
Yeah, the Trojan, yeah.
And it's definitely like a really gross touch for me that the septic tank is sitting there dripping the whole time while they're eating their lunch on the back bumper. I was transfixed.
I don't know. I like that gag. Made me laugh still.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. It's hard for me to like divorce the intense feelings of nostalgia this movie gives me. I can see everything that you guys are saying, but I'm like, it's still. Yeah.
Again, that's the power of movies. Again, just to get on a high horse for a second, but if you watched a movie when you were a kid, and a movie can make you feel like that again, that's worth its weight in gold. Like, being able to watch something and go like, I feel again like I did when I was 14. Like, that's why we pay movie stars millions of dollars, is because that's what, you know, that's the drug we're all chasing, is the, you know, the feeling of nostalgia.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of a waste. Like, if I was to film this movie, I wish they would have like filmed that actual events. I didn't like that the arena is clearly just a sound stage. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't look like how their arenas actually looked back in the day.
Yeah, like, that was definitely one of my takeaways from this movie, is that the wrestling wasn't as exciting as regular wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it wasn't even featured that much. It's just always like clotheslines. Like, there's so many clotheslines and suplexes, but you don't actually get to see. Like, I think if you're going to make a movie about wrestling, you need to like showcase some of the like the cooler moves, not just the basics.
I'm wondering whether, you know, once you decide to put these people into a film, suddenly the studio steps in and there's all sorts of insurance problems that they can't do what they normally do for stunts. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be one of the things that is hindering them, is because they're coming in as actors, not stuntmen.
Yeah.
But that was one of my big takeaways, is that, we discussed this in our Scorpion King episode. I was never a big wrestling guy. But I know I turned on some Pandemic Wrestling because I was curious. And my God, like, it's the show that makes it. When you watch Pandemic Wrestling, it's just weird. So
yeah, like in the early days, it was very much, it reminded me actually a little bit of Ready to Rumble. But
when it was even no with crowds, the,
like, when know? There was no crowds, it was so weird. And then they brought in, like, WWE brought in the, like, they called it the Thunderdome, which was like you could sign in and be on, like, it was basically a crowd of TVs, kind of like what the NBA did.
Yeah.
And even that, and then they would just pump in, like, they would just pump in cheers, and it was so bizarre.
Yeah, so I understand the power of the crowd and the power of the show itself. I mean, I can appreciate the theatrics of wrestling, even if I wasn't a big, huge follower back in the day. But yeah, this... all the wrestling fell flat to me, though. And like you said, I wish they had filmed at actual performances, because the real spectacle would be impressive to see in this movie.
On that note, though, I actually think one of the things that the movie does really well, now that, like, on the, like, being a, like, a more grown up wrestling fan and like listening to podcasts with wrestlers and stuff, is like it showcases like the how the backstage works and how they call the matches in the ring really well, which is like a thing that I'd think was in the 80s and 90s was always really dubious. When people thought it was real, it was things like that you didn't really know, or like as a fan, you didn't really have any insight into. Like even when they go to the first Nitro and Sinclair is talking to Goldberg and Diamond Dallas Page, and they ask him like what the finish is. Like, to admit to it, you're now admitting to your audience and all your fandom, like, oh, like, that is how it works. Like, the booker comes up with the finish, tells you who's going to win, And then, you know, he says, okay, well, he's not here, so we'll call it in the ring. Whereas normally they might have met up and they would have been like, well, these are going to be like our high spots. I'm going to hit, these are like kind of the moves we're going to do when, and then, you know, the little things they'll do out in the ring. But that was something I never really realized when I was younger, Dia, I guess, how like the backstage of professional wrestling works.
Yeah.
There's a pretty famous, I guess, moment where Hulk Hogan was doing like a television spot. And they came back and were on live TV and he didn't realize it. And he and the other wrestler, I can't remember who that was, were still like talking through what they were going to do next. Like they were going to like insult each other's mother or something, like, you know, trying to get really emotional. But he's like being broadcast of them like working out the details similarly to like, again, like in the wrestling match.
Whoops.
Which I just think, you know, exactly, just like a little funny thing. And again, I will absolutely say, just in regards to the wrestling, yes, it's fake, but it still requires a ridiculous amount of athleticism to do it well. You know, the people who are professional at it, they are absolutely athletes, and they're good storytellers. Like that's the reason why, you know, 14-year-old Colin loved wrestling and why 7-year-old Michael loved wrestling is it really is compelling, the stories that are being told. It's, you know, it's very almost classical, mythical good versus bad type of a situation. And when like Hulk Hogan goes bad, it's like, you know, it wrecks your mind. And when, you know, Andre gets body slammed first time ever, it's like, you know, mind-boggling sort of storytelling they're doing. So I want to give credit to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually feel like wrestling deserved a better movie than this.
It's a testosterone-filled soap opera is what it is. But it's an amazing stunt show.
Yeah.
No matter what. Yeah, absolutely. You 100% have to give it up to what an amazing live stunt show it is.
Yeah. I feel like one of the reasons why professional wrestling has always kind of hooked me is like I am like in the dead center of a drama kid. I love theater and all that stuff, but I also like really love combat sports specifically. Like I like MMA and I like boxing, but I like sports, and I think that's where that mesh of professional wrestling, that's why it really, I don't know, it just has always like been able to sink its teeth into me. Mm-hmm. And because I always find it funny, like there's so many people who would go watch professional wrestling show and you're like, oh, well, you know, do you like, would you ever go watch, you know, Oklahoma, or would you go to some, you know, play in the theater? And they'd be like, oh no, like I don't like theater or whatever.
No way, man.
And I'm like, this is high impact theater. Like it's just, yeah. I don't know, it's funny.
To cross over to my role-playing game roots, a LARP is a live-action role-play, and it's a sort of a sub-genre of role-play games where you assume an actual persona and you go act it out. Like you're not necessarily like at a table pretending. You're like you assume the character and you walk around and that kind of thing. And I've heard wrestling referred to as a LARP, where the audience is playing the audience. Mm-hmm. Like they know it's not real, but there's there to still do the thing that the audience would do, even if it were real. And I love that attitude of the audience is just in on it, but they're still going to do their part because, to your point, Sean, in like the pandemic when there was no audience, it kind of failed. Like you need the audience there to give the excited cheers and the groans and the like when the ref doesn't, you know, like they get. So many times the ref gets turned around, they don't see like a what should have been a pin doesn't get counted, and then later the other person reverses it and they get, and you're like, it's not fair, they cheated. Like you need the audience's energy there to make it work, I think.
Yeah. Now I will say, like, you know, in regards to the fighting, you know, with this movie, you know, we're at the first wrestling match, the first Nitro match that they managed to get into in the nosebleeds. Yeah. That was kind of a fun bit, is where they have the worst seats in the house. But when the wrestling turns to like quote unquote real wrestling, when they start actually kicking the shit out of the king, it doesn't look any different to me. It doesn't look any more violent. Shouldn't it?
but you know, maybe thinking of things in like reality is just a bad idea with this movie. But if you're in a wrestling ring and suddenly your opponent is no longer quote unquote fake wrestling, but they're like actually trying to hurt you, you shouldn't be doing top rope stuff, because that only works when the other person's helping you. And if someone's actually trying to hurt you and you climb the top rope, you're going to die.
Yeah. Time to punch someone in the nuts for one of what it must be at least a dozen different nut punches.
It seems to be. It is over and over and over and over again. So, but I mean, essentially this movie is a road trip movie, and it's also like a Rocky getting into shape montage movie sort of mixed together because, you know, I think we've already alluded to it. Jerry King. I was thinking of Jerry the King Lawler, which I think is probably what this character is based off of, sort of. He's like the most popular wrestler. He's the one that Gordy loves. And there's like some chicanery at the latest event, and he loses his belt, even though he's not supposed to lose. They basically like actually fight him and take the belt away. And so, of course, Gordy's all upset. And so this leads them to try to find him and help him get his belt back, and they get involved and blah, blah, blah. So it's sort of like a getting him back into shape, giving him, you know, getting his mojo back, but they also go on the road and they travel. Does that work for you, Colin? Like, do you still enjoy that aspect of the movie too?
I'll say the one thing I know, I was like, I didn't understand how the timeline worked between one Monday Nitro to the next, because sometimes it seemed like it was a week. But sometimes it seemed like it had been way longer, just when you're trying to, like, place events together. And then, because they're in Wyoming, and then all of a sudden they're in, like, Atlanta, which I don't know, I don't know geography or how far away that is, but I feel like it is far.
We do have an American on the show. So Wyoming to Atlanta, how far approximately would you say that is, Michael?
So I'm an ignorant American. Oh, okay. I know very little about my own country. Okay. But I would say Wyoming to Atlanta is probably 12 to 15 hours drive time.
Okay. Like, is there a state in between or a couple states in between?
Yeah, several states.
Okay. Yeah. I barely know all my own, and we've got a quarter of what you guys have for provinces.
So I pulled up a map of the U.S., so if you just drive from Wyoming straight to Atlanta, Georgia, you're going to be driving at a southeasterly slant. You're probably going to cross through either Colorado or Nebraska, maybe even both, Kansas, Arkansas, then Mississippi, Alabama, then you hit Georgia. You might go through Tennessee instead of Mississippi, Alabama. Again, it kind of depends on the roads, but yeah, it's actually, it's probably about halfway. Like, if you take America as a whole, it would be like driving half of it.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads. That's all I thought of as soon as you said, if you take away the roads.
So, according to Dr. Internet, driving from just Wyoming, the state, to Georgia, the state, is 26 hours.
Oh, okay.
So I was way off.
Way off. Well, congratulations on living up to your ignorance that you promised right at the top.
Yeah, I'm a product of the Kentucky educational system. So.
But anyways, it just like that part of it I felt threw me off a little bit. But again, to the Kevin Smith point, it's like we went from Clerks in Lusk, and then now we've headed this part of the movie I would call the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back part of the movie, even though that movie comes later.
So that's the thing, is that I kept going, they've just ripped off Jay and Silent Strike Back. That's exactly what this movie is, even down to them being picked up by the nuns. I'm like, that's just like the Scooby-Doo thing. But then when I saw that they actually came out the other, I'm like, holy shit, Kevin Smith ripped this movie off.
I mean,
did a much better job, but yeah.
It's weird because, again, it's also just part of that 2001, 2000, early 2000s teen movie aesthetic of this, like, okay, yeah, we go on the road trip, we meet some weird people that we don't realize are weird, like weird things are happening until we're done with it, and then we just go and move on with our our life to continue the story. I don't know, I didn't mind the road trip aspect of it. I always like when they meet his wife. There's just something about, I think it's Caroline Ray.
Yeah,
and just
she's got an itchy coot.
The itchy crotch, and just the fact that they show her like just like claw right up, like you're just, oh man. And then when they finally find Jimmy at the RV, I love all that.
Yeah, well, I do like, you know, when they leave the thing devastated. The reason why they don't have a vehicle to go on this journey is because they crash it into the truck full of toilet paper.
What are the chances? That is probably actually. I laughed at that line. I think it was probably the most entertained I was the entire, because it was so dumb, but also just the recognition of what are the chances that actually I laughed out loud.
But my thought was, why are they all loose rolls of toilet paper?
Yeah, it does make any sense.
One of the things that I never really noticed when I was younger, but really picked up on now, is how Gordy mispronounces words. And I just thought it was so funny. Like, even when they meet the king, and he's like, Sean realizes that is Jimmy King in the RV, and he's all like, "Oh, it's a rouge." so good.
Well, and we get things like the nun singing "Running with the Devil."
Running with the devil.
Yeah.
Running with the devil.
What's funny is I remembered that scene as I was watching it, but if you had asked me before, I would have told you that was from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yeah, that's fair.
That it was Jay and
You get a kind of a funny cameo, I guess. David Arquette's actual father plays Jimmy King's father. Like, when they get there, they're still trying to find Jimmy King after he lost his belt. So the married couple that plays Jimmy King's dad, and his mom and dad, his dad is actually David Arquette's dad.
Huh. Fun fact.
Did either of you happen to take note of when they meet? I don't even remember what his name. I'm pretty sure his name is Sherman. American Pie.
Yeah, Chris Owen.
Yeah, that kid. Yeah. The hacker. And then his hacking site is like, I can't remember what it was. It's like Hackers R Us or something. It's like, it's just the fakest made for a movie website I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Well, that's where part of that $24 million budget went. And they only recouped half of it.
Yep.
The rest of it went to making that sweet video game. Yeah. Although part of me just wondered if maybe they used the create a character mode on some other wrestling game.
Yeah. So now, are these guys really that dumb, though, that when they find Jimmy King in his trailer, that they don't actually know that wrestling is a setup?
Well, 7-year-old Michael believed it, but I have a hard time believing. I think there's a certain age where you just, like, you say you're going to keep watching and you enjoy it as an art form, but I can't believe anybody over like 14 still thinks it's real. Maybe, I don't know.
I was going to say that's the part of the movie that maybe, if I had to pick one part of the movie where I was kind of like, I am not really down for it anymore, it's that caricature of, because they're just like, they're almost like, I don't know if it's satire, but they're caricatures of like, of how a quote unquote normal person would perceive a wrestling fan. Like, I remember, like, anybody who has been a fan of wrestling at any point in their life has encountered somebody else who, when they find out you're a fan of wrestling, says to you, "Don't you know that's fake? That it's fake?" And a normal person would just, like, I would just, like, yeah, I do know it. Like, I know it's fake. Doesn't stop me from enjoying it. But then I think these guys are more on the side of what the person asking the question believes of wrestling fans, where they're like mm-hmm. just these stupid people who think it's, who have been duped into thinking it's real.
Well, yeah, I don't understand why that's still the comeback. You know that's fake, right?
Yeah. Like, it's the year 2000. Everybody, we all know it's fake at this point. Like, you know, they've gone through the steroid trials. Like, we all know it's not real anymore.
Yeah. Everyone from WWF came over to WCW, came over and couldn't keep their names or whatever. So it's like, okay, we know it's not real at this point.
So that aspect of it, I was kind of, I don't know if I'm really down for that anymore, but.
And that was 7-year-old me, or however I was, when Andre the Giant lied about why he couldn't wrestle. It's like, I know why you couldn't wrestle. You were making a movie.
Or when there was a point where, like, Razor Ramon and Diesel left the WWF and went to WCW and became Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. And then the WWF, I think this is the only time they've ever tried this, but they tried to make it so, like, a character is just a character, and we'll just hire new people to be those characters. And
they did a Bo and Luke Duke, like a Dukes of Hazzard situation.
Yeah, and it did not work.
Didn't work for Dukes of Hazzard either.
So they pull their Trojan toilet plan, and Jimmy decides to confront Sinclair. And Diamond Dog gets thrown into the toilet at one point, Why does he come out with toilet paper stuck in the back of his pants? That was a gag that didn't work for me.
Yeah. I think that is a gag of the time.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that being, like, a really funny thing that happened in a lot of different things at the time. But I think that's one of those gags that's been, it's kind of forgotten, or it doesn't have its, doesn't hit as well as it used to.
Doesn't hit as hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I forgot going back. I also thought that one of the funniest moments was when they meet Jimmy King's parents and then the mom mentions how he like dropped out of college or didn't go to school or whatever. And then, you know, Sean starts rattling off things from his personal biography, and he's like, and then after you died in a plane crash, he supported you. Like, it's just... yeah.
That might have been the second time I laughed in the movie. It wasn't as funny to me as the toilet paper gag, but the truck toilet paper gag. But I did think that was kind of funny as well,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So they're planning, though, on having a cage match for Jimmy to get his belt. And it's going to be real at the MGM Grand. And so they have to learn how to wrestle. So they go to Saul. I read that Saul could have been played by Jack Palance.
I think he was supposed to be originally, and then something happened. I don't know if Jack Palance was, if they died or whatever. Yeah, but what I had read that he actually was supposed to be Jack Palance.
I did look that up. Jack Palance died a few years later. So
he still might have been unable to.
Maybe.
To do it at that point. I don't know. But yeah, that he's also based off of a real person,
yeah.
like an actual wrestling coach that was very old, but apparently very good and, you know, able to do moves well beyond their prime, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, he gives me Stu Hart vibes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the character is modeled after, is Stu Hart.
Yeah. But Stu Hart or Killer Kowalski.
But I really liked Martin Landau in this role. I thought that he fit it really well.
Sal Banditti, you want to wrestle? I still love that. So good.
So they have to convince him to go. And we've got a little segment that we like to do every once in a while. So I think we're going to do a little I Used to Like This One Piece Theater.
Ooh.
So yes, for anyone that isn't listening to Michael's show, Farm to Fable, and if you're a Smallville fan, you really should be, one of his gimmicks is he has a rotating cast of co-hosts that he goes to for his show, and it's a really fun premise, and I mean, we always have guest stars on our show and love doing that, so we understand the appeal, but he likes to open his show with getting his guest co-host to read a scene with him from the episode of Smallville. So I wanted to do the same to Michael, because with us having appeared on his show, we've now done two cold readings apiece with him, and we haven't repaid the favor in our own segment. So I've sent both of you a copy of a script here, and this is the scene where they're trying to convince Jimmy King that he needs a trainer. And so I thought it would be fun. Now, I am, because Michael is a Kentucky boy and naturally has a bit of a Southern accent, I think he is a perfect Jimmy King for this scene. Yeah, and Colin, because I am offended by the way that Sean spells his name in this movie, I'm going to have you play Sean Dawkins, and I'll be Gordy Boggs.
All right, let's do this.
Sean Sugar Daddy Dawkins. All right. You cannot run away. You've got a major fight, and you've got major responsibilities.
Look, I got news for you. I sucker punched last night. It'll never happen again. It was a fluke.
How can you say that? We've got you this far, didn't we? Huh? Now we got a friend who's gonna get you a trainer.
Trainer? I don't need a trainer. I need a safe house, baby, or a new identity from the FBI, or like a fast car. That's what I need.
Jimmy King does not get scared. Jimmy King does not back down.
Look, you don't get it. Sinclair wants to kill me. So I'm dead and buried in the ground, and teeny little bugs are going to be feasting on my ass. That's what he wants.
No bugs are going to be feasting on your ass!
Yes! I used to like this One Piece Theater.
Mamma-mamma-me.
Some of my notes are just nonsensical.
Well, I feel like
We're at Sal now.
Oh no, yeah, we're at Sal, and then with Sal comes the reveal of, you know, Sasha's betrayal when Perry Saturn and Sid Vicious go and attack Sal and cripple him. And then after that, is that the point where they go back to Lusk? They have to go like back to basics, Rocky style.
Isn't that like where they hold auditions?
They try to recruit minions. Their posse.
Yeah,
with our cameos from like Bill Goldberg and.
Oh right, yeah, they go through the gym to recruit.
Yeah,
and then they go back, and then no one wants to like help them out because Jimmy's such a piece of shit.
Yeah,
and so then they go back to Lust and they find like the firefighter guy and the chewer and the girl. I can't even remember the girl's name.
Pretty Kitty has my vote. That was a moment where I laughed.
The guy who thought he was auditioning for Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, that's also another thing. Why have you ever noticed that whenever there's some sort of theatrical performance in any play, it's almost, I would say 90% of the time it's Oklahoma.
Yeah,
I think that's a very popular, famous play.
I never realized it was so famous.
Well, Colin and I met during a production of Oklahoma.
Yeah, which exactly. Is the
nice.
Which is the funniest part about all that.
Yeah. After the kind of training montage and the recruitment of the, what would you call it, the King's Court, mm-hmm. then before they head to the pay-per-view, he has to stop back and make amends with his family and, well, his parents and then his wife. And that's when he, like, meets the son and he promises that if he wins the match, the first things he's going to do is buy his kid a new set of teeth.
Which I guess is funny. I mean, you know... I'm trying to look at it with a lens of something like there's something about Mary, because I know there's a lot of the same stupid jokes in that movie now that I'm thinking about it and thinking it probably doesn't hold up. I haven't watched that movie in a while, but that's the kind of thing that this kind of joke reminds me of for some reason. I don't know why, but it feels Farrelly Brothers in this moment to me.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen, this is a weird tune, I've never seen There's Something About Mary.
Really,
but my impression of it is that it's a much higher brand of comedy than this.
I would say it's better executed, but I wouldn't say it's higher brand. Oh. There is some very lowbrow blue humor in that movie. I just think it lands better.
Yeah, like this is one where they don't go as far as like showing like testicles or something. Which is somewhere that there's something about Mary. This isn't Stifler drinking beer with male ejaculate in it. You know, this is, they stay away from a lot of, the butt finger with the Slurpee is the closest that they get when they're at the convenience store, you know? But I think we need to talk about that convenience store. I think it's time to go to Sponsorship Corner!
Man, I've been trying to get you there for like half an hour.
That's what
at least.
Yeah,
that's what that's she what said.
Right after talking about a finger in a butt. So yeah, I know that jumps us way back to the beginning, is where the convenience store was. But I was there. I took it. So always.
Well, I mean, they go back.
Yeah, yeah, they revisit it.
That's true.
Yeah.
So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Ready to Rumble is brought to you by the Stop and Shop, Miller Lite and Jim Beam, Coca-Cola and Minute Maid, Slim Jims, Snyder's Pretzels, Triscuit and Ritz Crackers, Crunch and Munch, Butterfinger, Honeycomb Cereal, Dunkin' Donuts, Driftwood, Dairy, Lay's and Ruffles Chips, Visa and MasterCard, AT&T, Apple and Sony Electronics, Boff Clothing, Ford Vehicles, Nate Starkman and Sons, the WCW and WCW Magazine, Hard Rock Cafe New York, and the MGM Grand Hotel. Plus a shout out to the fictional Dawkins Septic Service, A Throne Portable Toilets, and Lusk Hay and Feed. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Kind of startling that in a movie with Macho Man Randy Savage, there is no Slim Jim reference.
There was Slim Jims, yeah.
Oh, was there Slim Jims?
There was. You could see them, but there wasn't like a. I didn't notice like a full-on gag. But I don't know, if was he doing that then? Or did that come later? Because I remember the whole snap into a Slim Jim.
I would have thought that. I thought that would have been before.
Yeah, I think it was before. I think he was still doing it then. Yeah, it would have been hilarious to me if when he first shows up, he was just Slim Jim in hand and like took it and then went into the fight.
That would have been
fun. Like Popeye eating spinach.
Yeah. I did see in the trivia that Oliver Platt really did punch him in the face. And you can, at the end of the movie, they do like the little gag reel thing. And you can see that moment because as soon as he hits him, he's like, oh, God. And he like, start, you know, checks on him. But apparently he really did punch him there.
Yeah. I'd be a little bit nervous.
Yo, yeah. If I accidentally punched someone that looked like that, because if they decide to take retribution, I'm dead.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So I like how Charles Manson, Joseph Stalin, and Michael Bolton, they were all just following their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you're following your dream doesn't make it right. I need that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
You guys need some I used to like this one merch.
Yeah.
Get that set up.
Yeah. Just following their dreams.
Does that bring, are we finally at like the triple cage match?
I think so. I mean, we get the moment where Gordy walks away because his dad has,
that's important.
His dad has convinced him, to become a cop. And so he has to buckle down and just study for his tests. And then we've also got like this side love story going on between Sean and Wendy as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it feels tacked on,
it feels predictable as well, that the quirky girl from the drive-thru falls for the quiet guy on the side. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a very, very typical setup.
That does actually remind me the gag sort of where Gordy writes a letter to his dad and says, oh, I'm not a virgin, or I lost my virginity, or I'm not a virgin anymore. That made me think of The Jerk, when Steve Martin's character writes a letter back to home talking about his adventures in the city. And he doesn't quite say it that way, but he says something about he has a new job. I think he's going to be working with balloons or something. Like, it's very much like alluding to a blowjob.
Yeah.
The whole gag of that in the letter made me think of a better movie.
Well, I mean, with that, like, you know, Sean gets her a present, and then she says that she has a present for Sean. And the way it's shot, it makes me think, is she going to sex him up? She did.
The wrestling match there.
But we want to talk at all about Sasha and Gordy having a weird fight fest
for an object
like that. The whole, yeah, I don't know. Sorry. Shouldn't even brought it up. The seduction that turns into a wrestling match, but still ends in, I guess she pins him.
Yeah.
Count to three.
I think now we're like, let's get to the cage match. I think we're there.
The triple cage match.
I mean, you know, all things considered, and this is where like Colin's question about time earlier comes in. They pull this pay-per-view event together really, 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 really fast.
Well, I mean, pay-per-view, they're like, the wrestling schedule is like months in advance. So, like, the pay-per-view would have already been on the books. They would have just been deciding kind of what they were going to do. I mean, I don't know how long it takes to get a three-decker cage made, but
but I did read that that's something that has actually had actually happened in wrestling before and happened since, so it was a thing. Like, the movie makes it seem like it's completely brand new, at least that's the way I read it, but my little trivia deep dive, it seems like it had something that had actually occurred before, or maybe it didn't happen after, I don't know, but it's a real thing that has happened in wrestling.
Yeah, so the triple cage, that triple cage has, from what I recall, it had never happened before, and it only happened once at like the WCW pay-per-view, like immediately after the release of this movie, they used it for a legitimate match, and it was crazy because somebody, the guy Chris Canyon, who is actually like the wrestling, I don't know what you would call it, like choreographer basically for this movie, he was in that match and he got thrown off the top of it, which was a pretty cool spot, but since that point, it's never made an appearance again, and I really wish it would. I think it's a really cool concept.
It was a fun ending to the movie, but there was something about the way that it was shot, and again, this might go back to the idea that they're just on a soundstage. It seemed to be lacking some sort of drama that a real cage match would have. I can't quite put my finger on it, what it seemed to be missing.
Again, I think it goes back to what we were talking about before, is like they don't use the wrestling is all about like telling a story through the actual wrestling of the match. And mm-hmm. that's one thing that the movie never really does. Like they just, it's really more about what's happening around. So it's like, you know, the match starts and then immediately Diamond Dallas Page introduces the handcuffs. He gets the tables get turned, he gets handcuffed. And then so immediately Sinclair calls out all his cronies. They come in, they beat down the king. Well, no, first King takes them all out with like his ladder stuff. And then, you know, there's the reveal of his son and all that. And then he gets taken down. And then he's just getting stomped. And then Goldberg and the gang show up and Gordy. And then they save him. Right. And then from that point on, it's just who's going to climb the cage faster. And then, like, for all intents, in a true match, you would say that, like, Diamond Dallas Page, he gets the better and should have won the match, but then Sting shows up and, you know, makes it an even playing field. But really, it prolongs the match for no reason, because they both climb up again at the exact same time, have their fight at the top, and then it's, like, Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant homage, maybe, is what we get there with King body slamming Diamond Dallas Page. I still thought it looked cool, but I mean, he would be dead making that fall like 100% straight down through three levels of steel. Like, you're not surviving that.
Well, you know, like listening to you talk, one of the things that I think was bugging me about the way it was filmed is that it felt claustrophobic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because, you know, when you're watching a match like that on TV, they've got a lot more wide shots and everything like that. You know, I filming it from within the cage should build more tension, but in this case, it just made you feel like trapped, or it just, I don't know, it didn't work for me, like, as the spectacle of wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they didn't want to, like, really focus on the actual wrestling in the cage, what they should have done was anytime that would be taking place is like had like an alternate story happening backstage. Like maybe Sean is trapped backstage, or maybe like somebody is like being held hostage backstage to kind of like take King's mind off of things. And then have like this alternate story that needs to be resolved all happening backstage where you can film it like a proper movie and then just cut back to the match so that it didn't. Like, I agree with you, Sean. Like, having it all take place, the cage, it is a claustrophobic structure because you're not meant to be able to get out anywhere.
Yeah.
So, like, having it all contained, I think, was kind of like a handicap for the filming, especially when you're not going to have them really do any, you know, high-level wrestling.
Like, have you ever seen the movie The Wrestler? I'm sure you have. Mickey Rourke?
Yeah.
I mean, that is an absolutely incredible movie. But the way that it's shot, it works for, like, you know, you can feel the pain of the character and everything like that. Whereas, like, this is, you've just got these static shots inside this really small space. And it's like, well, no, you're not seeing the grand spectacle that is wrestling. You know, so I think that, though, I think I've figured out what it is that bugs me about this end match, or, you know, like even the arenas themselves, because the arenas don't seem grand as well. Like you said, it seems like a soundstage.
Right.
I kind of have to feel like I'd be curious to know, like, how much with the wrestler, you know, like Mickey Rourke actually like trained to be a wrestler, and he trained to like do like, I don't get that same vibe with Oliver Platt.
No.
You know, like,
no.
Yeah.
I think maybe he probably topped out at like stage combat, but he never really takes like any huge bump. You know, he kind of just always gets kicked down and falls down and gets stomped.
Yeah, but pretty much.
I mean, you got all the classic tropes of a wrestling match with, like, you know, the other people coming in and then they turn and you got other people coming in. Like, I've seen that in so many wrestling matches that I think that there's only, again, you know, I'm not trying to be too dismissive, but like a paint by numbers or like what are the most exciting things that can happen in wrestling?
Yeah.
Got your cage match. You got your heel turn. You got your outsiders coming in. We have all of that there. it's just not produced, or again, execution wise, it doesn't, like, I think watching an actual wrestling match would be way more entertaining than what we see here on film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Something is lost in the translation to cinema, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder though how much they have to pay to get the Ready to Rumble guy though to announce the opening for it.
I mean, I've heard like the Buffer Brothers don't show up for less than $1 million, so
okay.
That's by today's. I don't know how big they were back then, but
people, or someone else that I forgot to mention is the granny from The Wedding Singer. Fuck, oh, yeah. I fucking love that woman. Oh, she was awesome in this movie.
she was good.
And, you know, so Sting shows up, he saves the day, because, you know, Jimmy King is okay with him.
I feel like they're just like, he's probably the most popular WCW wrestler at the time, so they wanted him in there, but he doesn't add anything to the story.
But if Sting gives Oliver Platt a stamp of approval, then it's okay in the WCW's book.
Jimmy King's okay in my book. And again, you know what it was? It was another Mallrats homage, because he's just being Batman. Like, it's literally just...
Yeah, he's up in the rafters. Yeah. So Jimmy gets the belt, though. We do get our happy ending, of course. And Joey Pants gets beat up by our crowd. And then Sean is a wrestler now?
Gordy's a wrestler.
So Gordy's a wrestler now? So this is... mirroring what was happening with David Arquette is...
Yeah,
I think we missed that. That's the big payoff where his character is the lawman.
He comes in wearing
like a law officer, you know, uniform, and he becomes a wrestler. And like they want Jimmy to come back, and he'll get a new partner from tag team. He'll get a new manager. And he's like, I already got my partner and I already got my manager. And it's like, okay, sure. I will say Scott Kahn,
yeah.
Looks awesome in that red, like, is that a zoot suit or something? But I mean, it does make no sense.
His pimp outfit.
Dude looks good in that suit.
He needs a pimp chalice, too.
I kind of thought it was funny because that end speech by the King is... I never really noticed how often you don't realize characters in movies have last names. And when all of a sudden he's like, Gordy Boggs, a.k.a. The Law, and Sean Sugar Daddy Dawkins, I was like, oh, what the heck? Was that referenced before?
Right. So another one of my trivia things is apparently Diamond Dallas Page tried to get a second or a different ending for the movie, where after the match they would go backstage and it would be revealed that Diamond Dallas Page and Jimmy King were really good friends and they would all like share a drink together. And I actually think that would have been a better ending.
I saw that too somewhere, and it was, yeah, it was welcome to the thing, kid.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Basically explaining that it's a business and it's all, you know, part of the show that they're trying to put on. Again, for it being a wrestling promotion, like, I thought that was a better fit. Though it does explicitly say that it's fake at that point, and maybe that's why they've rejected it. But I think from a movie standpoint, it's a better ending.
Well, see, even when The Law showed up, I even found that a little underwhelming. It's kind of like, you know, for me, it was like, mm-hmm. King had it. Yeah. You add nothing. The rest of the team had it.
They could have given The Law the Sting thing where, you know, Diamond Dallas Page is about to win, and that's when Gordy shows up and knocks him down. That actually fulfills his journey. But otherwise, like, again, I just feel like the execution here, they're pulling from a lot of tropes. You know, it should work. It does work to a point, but just everything's just like one degree off from like the good version of what they're trying to do, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like the assertion is kind of that really the only reason they needed Gordy was for him to drive his motorbike through the door so they could open the door so everybody else could get in.
Yeah.
But himself as a wrestler is kind of a non-factor.
No, he's basically another manager out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie ends with them back at the convenience store telling the story to the kids. And the end, except for the bloopers, which include the fantastic getting hit in the nuts montage. which was a fitting way to end this entire
If you didn't
movie.
Get enough in the movie, let's do a breakdown and pull it all together for you. Clip show of the clip show.
Yeah, this is the scoreboard of getting kicked in the nuts, right? But that's Ready to Rumble. Well, Colin, Michael, on IMDb, it scored 5.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 23. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 23% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 52%. So very comparable. 5.3 and 52% from audiences, 23s from the critics. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a chair to the head in the cage match. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. The Big Brabowski says 4 out of 5 stars. I love this movie. But everything that happened after this movie came out, I hate. Jimmy King for life. Chris May Wideau gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, why I think Ready to Rumble is the greatest movie ever. Number 1, the WCW Arena. Number 2, the wrestlers for Monday Nitro. Number 3, the music and how the plot was set up and how funny the movie was. My thanks to the wrestlers, to all of them, and that the crew made this movie a very happened. Special thanks goes to Randy Savage, Bonesaw McGraw, that he helped with this movie, along with Sting Wrestler, and along with Diamond Dallas Page, Bill Goldberg, and the ring announcer that said, let's get ready to rumble.
He actually doesn't say, let's get ready to rumble. He says, are you ready to rumble? Because I have a feeling let's get ready to rumble is a catchphrase that they weren't allowed to use, probably.
Probably.
Change it just enough.
Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Brendan O says 3 out of 5 stars. Ready to Rumble is one of those films I enjoy mainly because of the wrestling aspect of the film. The juvenile humor is over the top and I don't feel it was essential for the storyline. The best parts of the film are the three cast members playing off each other. The film will appeal to the younger audiences and fans of wrestling. I think this brings me back to an era in my life when wrestling consumed my life and that part of me enjoys the film. The filmmaker struggles to maintain backstory purpose for the two dim-witted leads, and they can't overcome the one-dimensional characters. I won't pretend this is the Casablanca of wrestling films, but I enjoy watching this every now and again. Super reviewer Bobby H says 3 out of 5 stars and says, being a wrestling fan, it's hard not to like this movie. It has some of the dumbest dialogue that I've ever heard or seen in a movie, yet it's funny and fun to watch. I would tell any wrestling fan to watch this movie. If you're not a wrestling fan, you may find it pointless. But for me, it was golden. CJZ, or Z for our American friends, says 3.5 out of 5 stars. I'll acknowledge first that I know this is not a good movie. I'm aware that it is a rather dumb and probably generic buddy comedy flick. Having said that, I do find myself enjoying myself every time I watch this movie. I'm completely willing to believe and accept that I probably enjoy this movie more than the majority of others would because of the fact that I grew up watching this movie off and on when I was young. But revisiting it as an adult, I still find myself thoroughly enjoying it, despite its many flaws. So the way I see it, if a movie can incite laughter, joy, and entertainment, no matter how good or bad, then it did something right at the very least.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Statement, not the rating.
And then the last one is Kurt C, 4 out of 5 stars. If you don't take this movie seriously and just relax and remember it's pure satire, then you can find a very fun movie to watch. If you possibly have a soft spot for the ridiculous soap opera of pro wrestling, then you will like this movie too. Personally, I thought they did an excellent job with the material. It's supposed to be dumb. It's supposed to be over-the-top outrageous in its cheesiness. Put the brain in neutral and let the 10-year-old inside you have a little fun as you watch.
Right.
There we go.
So yeah, like I said, you know, basically 50% from audiences and 23% from critics. Michael, you made it known right off the top how you felt about this movie. So, final thoughts on the movie. What's your takeaway?
So my takeaway is that there are aspects that I could see this being a good movie. Again, like I said, just everything, all the gags are just like one degree off from being successful, whether it was the writing, the acting, or just something about it just doesn't click for me. I no longer have a fondness for wrestling, so that doesn't get me over sort of the hump and, you know, fully being able to enjoy it. I mean, I didn't hate this movie. I didn't like, you know, I didn't get angry from watching it, but it's not a movie I ever will need to watch again. I cannot recommend it. I would probably give it a 4 out of 10,
yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say it's like it's got all the right ingredients, but just in the wrong portions. So it's not baking the cake properly. That was where I was going with my metaphor. I kind of agree with you where I'm sorry, Colin. You know, it's now spoiler time on my part here. Here we go. I wasn't a huge fan of the movie either. Like it's, and that's where I feel like everything was there that needed to be there for this to be a pretty darn good movie. And it, for me, ended up being kind of meh. I got some laughs out of it, but I agree with the 50% on IMDb. I'm kind of, I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Well,
so now, Colin, take us out on a high note, because yep. Now it's time for you to tell both Michael and myself that we are wrong, because we both love Clue and you didn't. So here we go. Fire it back at us. Why should people be watching this movie?
I mean, I don't really have anything to fire back with. I would say that, like, I think more than ever, and it's like it's not enough to like just be like a casual fan of professional wrestling. I think you had to have been a rabid fan of professional wrestling,
okay,
to watch this movie and really enjoy it, because it's just like I find it, like, I almost find it more interesting. Well, not more, but interesting. It hits different watching this movie now because, you know, again, it takes me back to, like, that time of my life. But it's also, it's kind of like a time capsule of the wrestling world. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody would know what WCW has been gone for 20 years. Like, nobody knows what WCW is anymore. And it's,
did this movie kill the WCW?
Well, it was on its way out. But at, like Michael said before, it was in its, like, dying breaths at this
point. But they,
like,
couldn't take a $12 million loss, though.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a boost and change their fortunes, and instead it was the albatross around the neck that sank them to the bottom.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, that promotion had tons and tons of problems leading up. Like, it's just, like, it had lots of problems that also led to, aside from this movie. So I'll say that. Like, I don't think anybody who's, like, not a pro wrestling super fan will get, like you guys have kind of said, I don't think the story and the comedy necessarily is executed well enough for, like, a casual fan or a person who's not a fan of professional wrestling to watch this movie and get a lot out of it. Like, I think I still kind of do, like, even if, like, there's probably a good reason why I literally haven't watched this movie probably, you know, since, like, my early 20s, when I was at the time when I was kind of losing interest in wrestling.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder if I had watched it in the intervening period, if I still would have, if I would have liked it as much. Because now I'm kind of, like, back into it. So I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I take my, like, nostalgia glasses off and look at the movie objectively, like, from a story component, I really agree with what Michael was saying, especially about Gordy. I think that there was a lot more that could have been done to push the story of his dream of being a professional wrestler. And I think that would ultimately make the movie a lot better, because, you know, that was, like, my dream when I was younger. And I think you have, like, kind of your, like, hero's journey with Jimmy King of, like, falling and like, getting back up and all that. But I think they could have done more to do that with Gordy, so that when he finally does reach that level, it maybe hits a little bit better.
Well, here's a bizarre cut to throw at you, but I think of a movie like Hot Rod, the Andy mm-hmm. Samberg movie, where he wants to be a daredevil. That's his plan. That's his dream. Everything he does is about this. And in this movie, yeah, David Arquette kind of talks about loving all those things, but you don't see him actively trying to pursue it. Like, it would be better if he was trying to be something in wrestling.
Yeah, and, like, I think he talks a lot about loving wrestling, but I was just trying to think, like, I don't think there's a single point where he says, like, man, wouldn't it be cool to be one of these people? Like, they just, like, idolize Jimmy King, but I never really get the sense that, like, he wants that for himself necessarily.
Yeah, and that's a character flip that could have just added this one string to the entire movie that kind of pulled it all together, is that because at the end, even though like his dad has pulled him away, he's like, no, I want this too much. Like, mm-hmm. because when he becomes a wrestler, when he becomes the Law, it's kind of like, oh, okay, so you're a wrestler now, you know?
That's where, like, the perfect professional wrestling movie is Nacho Libre. And if you want to watch, I would say that anybody, professional wrestling fan or not, maybe this is a stretch, but I'm trying to think, because I also very much love Nacho Libre, so I don't know. But I think that movie has like a solid story that could be applied to any profession, and it would still be good. Whereas
it's the dreamer story, not the listless fan story.
Yeah. And so I think Gordy's story could have been beefed up. And again, I never really noticed, but thinking about it now, I also agree with what you guys said about just the, like, for being a professional wrestling movie, there isn't a lot of wrestling.
An actual match would be more exciting.
That's the thing that I guess ultimately why I consider this a failure.
Yeah.
Is if this is supposed to be a love letter to wrestling, I think it does a disservice to those people who are shown to be fans of wrestling by making them dumbasses.
They plagiarize that love letter.
Yeah.
And then the wrestling itself isn't as exciting as what you would actually see watching a show. So I think it fails on both sides. It doesn't make wrestling fun or cool to watch, and it kind of insults the people who enjoy it. Like, yes, you get the follow your dreams thing, but they even kind of make fun of that too by saying, oh, these other people, you know. I just feel like you could have a better movie. Gordy's a person who has obligations. He's, you know, his lawman and his father. He's going to follow in the footsteps. He's trying to get by on this, you know, the job that's not very exciting. But his dream is to be a wrestler. And then you could make it a kind of an inspirational story that's not insulting to your audience and the sport itself. So I don't know. I think ultimately that's why I think it fails, is I don't think it does what it wants to do. And it just is poorly put together in spite of that, or in cause of that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I like, that's kind of what I was thinking as well, is like, I think I used to watch this movie and think, oh, like, they really captured what it is to be a wrestling fan, because maybe I was a little bit more like less, I was a little bit more like more close to it and like less mature. But now watching it, I agree. Like, I don't think this movie does a good job of promoting how good professional wrestling is. I think weirdly, even though it's clearly made in conjunction with like what would have been the second biggest wrestling promotion at the time, it's a mockery of wrestling. And maybe mm-hmm. and maybe that speaks to why, you know, a lot of the guys who would have been bigger at the time like didn't want to take part in it. Like, I don't know. I've always just thought it was weird that Diamond Dallas Page was the main antagonist, when Diamond Dallas Page is like one of the biggest like good guys in wrestling ever. Like, he was never really a bad guy.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking that was really strange, and why they didn't have more Sting and Goldberg. It's like, I feel like those guys kind of, they maybe just had like contractual obligations to show up.
Well, I mean, it's like, but I said at the top, you know, within the first 2 minutes, I'm like, I know why this is one of Colin's favorite movies. And it's 100% you. So I get the nostalgia. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry that I didn't love this movie more. It's so close. Oh, how many live wrestling events have you attended?
How many am I? I've been to about 8 like WWE events, and then I've been to like quite a few. Like in Alberta, there's a promotion called the PWA, the Prairie Wrestling Alliance. They like run shows in Edmonton and Calgary, or they did pre-pandemic, and I've been to quite a few of their shows. I mean, I love watching it live, and it's been one of those things, like, because I felt like I didn't appreciate it enough when it was around pre-COVID. Now that everything's kind of opening up again, I have like a resolution, I guess, to like go out and watch more. But yeah, I don't know. At the end of the day, I would say like I don't fault anybody for not liking this movie. Like, I can I can watch it honestly and see, like, oh yeah, this movie is definitely not for everyone. And I am 90%, 99% positive the only reason why I still enjoy it is because it just captured my love when I was 14.
And that's perfectly cool.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Michael. We weren't able to turn him on Clue, but we turned him on Ready to Rumble.
You know what? Clue's not so bad. maybe I was hamming it up a little bit too much for the podcast because I felt like I needed to have a hot take, but it's not terrible. I'm actually really excited.
It has a funny bathroom gag when he gets down in the bathroom, he flushes the toilet, comes out washing his hand, and that cracks me up every time.
I'm actually really excited. I contemplated auditioning for it, but the Citadel Theater in Edmonton for their next season is doing a production of Clue, and I was like, oh man, how sweet would that be to get a part in that? And I'll just send Michael a backstage selfie of me being who knows who.
I would be so jealous.
I would settle for just being like the cop.
Well, I'm thinking it's 2022. For all you know, you could be Miss Scarlet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Well, there we go. That's Ready to Rumble. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A big, huge thank you to our buddy Michael Ross. Thank you for joining us once again.
Happy to be here.
Michael, if people want to find you doing your thing online, including our very recent episodes of one of your shows with Colin and myself guest co-hosting, give us your lowdown. Where can people find you?
So the easiest way to find me is on Twitter at the RPG Academy, all spelled out, no spaces, no underscores, anything like that. And that's the primary thing I do in this space is I do a hobby podcast about role-playing games and board gaming, that kind of stuff. The show that you both have been on multiple times now is called Farm to Fable. It's a Smallville rewatch fan cast. So we're rewatching every episode, all 10 seasons. Like you said, I have a kind of a rotating cast of guest co-hosts that come in. We have new people that have come in now, so we now actually have more co-hosts than episodes in a season, so some people will not repeat every season type of a thing. But we look at the episode, we love Smallville, but we also recognize some of the silliness that comes with the show, and we try to do a good job. Some days we do better than other, balancing that of what we love versus maybe the stuff that doesn't quite work, which actually kind of translates pretty well to what we did here in this episode of Ready to Rumble. You know, there's things about it that we like, some things that didn't quite land, and we talk about both of those. So you can find that at Farm2Fable on Twitter, or Smallville Farm to Fable just online. If you search for that, you can find it anywhere podcasts can be found.
Outstanding. If you like that show, well, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell people. That word of mouth spreads. Everything that will help us in the future find an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Give us some stars. Five stars is preferred. Give us a review. We love hearing words of affirmation, but more importantly, it messes with the algorithms. You ever be on YouTube and it recommends videos and it's like, who's been using my YouTube account? Because why do I want to watch this cross-stitching video? But for some reason, you go down this rabbit hole of cross-stitching videos and you're just mesmerized. It does the same thing. Helps bump us up in the ratings. Or if you want to go one step further, go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family, donate to the show, and get a shout out because you're now an executive producer just like Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. And if you want to drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like so that we can talk about those, you can email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Oh, yeah.
Nice. All right, I do have a quick question. So looking at my script, the second thing Jimmy King says is, look, I got news for you. I sucker punched last night. Is there a missing word Is it supposed to be I got sucker punched?
Yeah, I also see one where it says trainer. I don't a trainer. Oh, you're drunk. Yeah. Are you drunk?
I don't remember. Am I supposed to be just like? Is it supposed to be the missing words? Okay,
Colin's the expert.
I think with sucker punched there because he's the one who punched. So I think he's saying like I sucker punched. Maybe it's I sucker punched him last night.
Okay.
And then with the second one, I think it's just. Yeah, he's just saying trainer. I don't need a trainer. And then at the third one, yeah, the third one makes sense. I don't know why it has.
Yeah, third one's fine.
I don't know why it has stars. I don't know. I think maybe those are meant to be quotations.
Emphasis.
Yeah. Emphasis. I think.
I've noticed actually that stars have made their way into some people's texts lately, where they want to emphasize things instead of quotation marks.
I'm not up on the current. Lingo, I guess.
I do a fully capitalized word if I want to emphasize a certain word. That's how I do it. That's how I roll.
Yeah.
Just change the font like three sizes bigger for no reason.
Jimmy King does not get... Oh, I think I have a typo too. I don't think that's supposed
sacred?
To be sacred.
Yeah, I didn't...